It's hard to even think about what else. The other thing would be like I kind of only more so heard about it instead of seeing it, but when you got double stifled.
I mean, I wasn't mad about that. I'm not going to say that I loved it.
Oh, you would, I think, objectively love that.
I loved it as much as you could when you're just like, great, I lost the game.
Like, if you were in my seat and you were watching, you would have loved it.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't hate it.
Ragavan the monkey was an overpowered card. Just slam him on one, no one's having fun. Just magic game is hard. Ragavan the monkey, maybe he should catch a band. With treasures to make and top decks to take, you should kill him if you can. There must have been some magic in play, designs, drinks that day. Cause if you tested this card once, you would surely say,
no way!
Oh, Ragavan the monkey, making steam vents playable. He's in Painter Blade, Giant Ephemerate, meant to Delver and Control. Dashity dash dash, dashity dash dash, watch that monkey go. Dashity.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the Legacy podcast that's hoping that next year isn't as much like the lyrics to the Mountain Goats this year. My name's Quinn Omori. No one got that. It's fine. There's some people who are going to listen to it and be like, oh, haha, very funny. Rob Cross, looking at you, buddy. Anyways, my name's Quinn Omori, and I'm here as always with my host Jeff Kinsey. Jeff,
hello. Hello, good.
And my co-host Brent McBain. McBain, what's up?
Hello.
We have no housekeeping. There's the old school event we've been talking about. RIP. It was a good couple months. There's more restrictions in Vancouver, Canada, British Columbia as a whole, I guess. And so the Magic Stronghold Weekly is once again on pause.
Yeah. That's so sad.
Shout out to Stronghold for, I think, doing the right thing when it comes to safety of the community. But yeah, it's a bummer.
Yeah, it's like, it's absolutely sad, but it's not sad like because they chose to do it. Like, definite shout out for them for making
what, you're not doing, you know, like the Donald Trump sad.
Many people are saying this. Yeah, it sucks, but it's nice that, you know, they're responsible enough to shut it down when things are looking this way. On your Mountain Goats thing for a second, you know, that I feel like I should know because there's obviously some like magic adjacency with the Mountain Goats.
Oh, yeah.
So double.
Does it have Mountain Walk? Whatever you're referencing.
Well, Mountain Goats do, but the singer from
Mountain Walk,
Mountain Goats, is always posting on Twitter his decks that he's drafted.
Yeah, he plays Magic. He's like a giant nerd, so he plays Magic. I actually don't like the Mountain Goats that much. I've like endeared myself to Mountain Goats fans, then immediately alienated. We're back. The three of us are back. Alienated us from the Mountain Goats fans again.
Perfect.
Yeah, there's a song which is, it's one of those things where they write good songs, and I just don't like the way the guy sings, which is like not his fault at all, obviously. And it's a preferential thing, you know. He's like a really good songwriter. And the other day I was listening to like something on YouTube, and he like autoplays into something else. And then a singer that I really like was like covering the Mountain Goats, and I'm like, fuck, this song rules. And I'm like, oh, it's a Mountain Goats cover. Oh, I see. Wow. What a great song when it's sung by Laura Stevenson. But I digress. Back to magic. Another year older, another year wiser, or not. Another year older for sure. I think we just wanted to take the last cast of, well, I guess when people listen to this, it will be the first cast of 2022, but our last recording of 2021, and just talk about the year that was.
Man, unrelated to magic. How was the year for you guys?
Just throw that in there.
Relative to the rest of my life or relative to 2020?
You know, sure.
Relative to the rest of my life, like one of the worst years of all time. I think it's safe to say.
The definite top 10 worst years just, of
definitely
my life.
Like, yeah, top 10 worst, easy. And I have it, like, I mean, I want to say that I have it, like, a lot better than a lot of people, which I, you know, want to recognize.
I thought you were going to say you got a lot of 10 chunks of years of your life being so old.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, I don't know. What are the things I like doing? I like playing Magic, going to see bands and eating, and I did very little of any of that. I saw one concert this year.
That's actually sick. You got to go see one.
Yeah, I really snuck one in there, apparently, in like that fucking zone.
I randomly snuck a concert in maybe a month ago. A friend was in town and he had tickets and he's like, hey, you want to come? And yeah, that was really special. I don't know. I feel like I don't have that much to complain about, honestly. Like, it feels like things are good enough that it's like rude to complain.
Right. It's like a holding pattern year.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say that it's, I have it worse than other people, but I think it's fair to say that, like, my whole, you know, the 40 years of my life have been mostly 40 years of, like, generally speaking, like, you know, relatively high privilege. And in that context, for sure, the last 2 years have been like the two worst years of my life. I can't really remember years like 1 through 4, but I think they're pretty good. Like, there was no unprecedented global pandemic.
Yep.
I don't think that hundreds of people died in a heat wave in my city in like the first preceding 4 decades either. I don't know. It's been pretty bad, I think. I don't know. Jeff, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, all the caveats you guys are saying, but it's interesting that, like, I find often if there's like kind of a bad period in your life, or like it's very much like either you've done something, like, you know, you've made a mistake or you made the wrong choice, or like something has happened to you. It's very rare that you have like a bad period in your life where nothing in particular happened to you. In fact, given what's happened to a lot of people, you're coming off very well, but, you know, just everything all together is just kind of bad.
I think, and that's like, what makes it worse though.
Yeah, it does. But see, this is where like I kind of think about like stress sometimes is like, if I couldn't have done anything to avoid it, then like, don't worry about it that much. Like, it sucks. You know, I'm in my house, fucking working in my house, living in my house, doing literally everything in my house for another goddamn year. And I normally would love to be in my house, but I'm sick of it.
I think if you're just asking for like a ranking, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there was the year that my dad ran me over for the car by accident and I fractured my hip. That's like pretty high up there on the ranking of bad years too. But I think this is worse. Because you just look around you and you're like, man, this fucking sucks for everyone. You know, like, I was on the SkyTrain the other day and I'm wearing like an N95. And because I'm scared of getting Omicron variant on the fucking SkyTrain because those people with the mask under their nose after 2 years, like, come on, just don't wear one.
Right. At least like take a stand on something.
Yeah.
Like, it's wrong, but like you're splitting the difference in the worst way possible where nobody respects you.
We have different convictions. Okay. Like, I don't really, I respect that more than just like, you know, when people ride their bikes and they have like a helmet on their handlebars and you're like, you just don't wear the helmet. Like, don't wear the helmet. That's fine. I've ridden my bikes on a helmet before. I don't recommend it, but I get it. But I digress. But there's just women who, like, I don't know if she was like unhoused, but like she's still, you know, she like wasn't rich for sure. And she's like, is it N95? She's like, I'm like, yes. And she's like, I'm really worried. Cause she's like, so I've been wearing 2 masks. And I just like reached in my bag and I had like 2 wrapped up in plastic. I'm like, please take these. And like, that's the kind of thing that I'm just like, what a shit year. Like, mm-hmm. Where I'm just like, please, I can afford this. You take these so that you don't fucking die. I don't know.
Yeah. It's messed up, man. Yeah, sorry, wasn't gonna be much of an upper, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, the headline for the year is really just kind of like more of the same with some slight like positivity coming out. We got to play Paper Magic again. I mean, much like 2020 where we played Paper Magic at the start, we instead played Paper Magic at the end. So, you know, in a roundabout way, those periods are almost as close as they would have been. If you just, you know, chop a year off this one, you get straight through. It'll be perfect. yeah, I don't know. Glad everybody I know is doing okay. And I don't know. Fuck. Hopefully it's all sorted out soon.
Lightening the mood. Should we move on to the magic portion of the podcast?
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. Apparently I'm a little somber today.
We had this whole thing and then you're like, okay, so let's get started. So how you guys doing? Like leaning back in your therapy chair or something. I'm like, where did this come from?
Jeff asks a question and answer. That's how the podcast works.
Yeah.
All right.
But for the magic section of the podcast, basically do the same thing we did last year. It might be slightly different categories. I was going to say we didn't check back on last year's notes, which is true, but also it's because we put McBain did.
Thanks.
So Ed. Is it the exact same categories?
The majority is, but there's a few new ones.
I don't think it's fair for you to paint yourself as like, look, I looked at the notes because I made this document 2 hours ago. And we're recording a day later than we usually do. Just want to throw that out there. But I digress again. Why don't we just get into it? We're starting big. And we're starting with favorite deck of the year, with the caveat, not like a deck that jumped out as new necessarily, but just a deck that you picked up, played, meant a lot to you for some reason this year, had a lot of fun with, whatever it is. Brendan, you're up first in the notes.
I wanted to say lands for this, which has been like my kind of go-to for a while. But this year, I definitely, with Modern Horizons 2 and this whole 80 card Death and Taxes deck becoming a thing, I definitely picked up the cards for that and started playing it and enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I would. having like owned the 60 card deck like a year or so or a year or two ago and then selling off a bunch of pieces of it, and always being terrified to play the Death and Taxes mirror. It's just like the overall grindy nature of the deck. I was quite pleased, and I've been enjoying the Yorion D&T build, especially with all of the material coming out of JR and Jason. So yeah, that's my favorite deck.
Yeah. I mean, you've been playing it a decent amount and grinding them out. It definitely feels like a little bit of a different beast once you get like, you know, just quad laser everything.
Oh yeah. When you're like, oh, I'm just going to recruit out my fourth Solitude to solve this problem for the fourth time. And your opponent's just like their head in their hands. Like, what's going on?
Or you just draw your 1/79 Peacekeeper.
No, you started in your hand. Like, come on.
Oh, sorry.
I learned how to play the deck through error. I have to say, like, usually I like a guide and like learning and stuff like that, but I felt like I really made awful blunders that cost me games. And that's the only way I really learned. I think I learned like 7 of them in one game against you, Jeff, where at the end of it, I was just like, I'm pretty sure that was the worst I've played all year.
That was a great fucking game.
It was like onboard trick into onboard trick into like, oh yeah, I forgot you recruited for that. Into like, here's my Caracas. And I just like ran into everything and it was awful.
But that was my favorite moment because I felt like I got to role play as you for how you normally get to act when you're playing lands. Where, you know, you have your Yorion, I have mine. You get yours suited up with the sword so you can attack in the air and you're like so smug. You're like, this is fucking genius. I'm going to hit him, kill this other thing, draw a card. I'm in the business. And it's just like, all right, activate Caracas, bounce your Yorion. And you just see the pieces fall apart. Yeah. I mean, the deck, the only way you learn the deck is through, you know, trial and error. I mean, it's the same with so many decks. With D&T, there's so much weight behind a lot of the choices that you make. And on the other side, there's so much weight in waiting for your next time to do something because you cast your one spell for the turn and you thought, I did that wrong. And you just get to look at your opponent brainstorming and pondering, fetching, and you're just like, that one choice I made was definitely the wrong one.
Yeah. What about you, Jeff? Is there a favorite deck you had?
My favorite deck to play this year and my experience and stuff with it. Look, it's hard to not say D&T because I played a fuckload of D&T and there was a lot of good additions and changes to the deck. But the deck that like really got my juices flowing, I mean, it's got to be Esper Vile, man. Like, there's so many different ways you can take that deck. And honestly, most of them aren't that good right now. But like, you can, you know, do like a... I was messing around for a while with like a kind of more D&T side or D&T like thought process build where like you just jam up on like solitudes in different ways, like, you know, one for one stuff. It's two for one technically. And then leverage like Soul Herder to kind of get going with that. Cause the normal deck only plays like one solitude. Or you can, you know, lean harder into like a spell seeker, like ephemerate thing, where Jeff Lynn was fucking around with spreading seas. And he was even talking about adding, I'm going to forget the name of this. Is it not Avacyn's Heliod's Pilgrim? It's like a...
It surges up an aura?
Yes. It's a 3-mana 1/2 and it finds an aura. So you can find your spreading seas. You can find Wheel of Sun and Moon for your graveyard hate. Like, you can do a lot with this little tutor piece.
Wait, what does spreading seas actually get you other than making something an island?
That's great. Draws a card, makes something an island. You can flicker with Yorion. You can hit a saga and kill it. You can hit somebody's, like, you know, dual land and fuck with their mana. It's just one of those little speed bump cards where, you know, you chuck it out, it's
who
free.
Who plays blue? Like, it's so good. It's basically a strip mine.
You get to Yorion it. It's great. I also lost the game in Eternal Weekend. I was playing D&T and my opponent spreading seized my island or my planes and I just lost. So it's great. But like the deck was probably the one that I spent like the most time on feeling like I was making substantial changes. Like I did not drive the archetype forward. I barely shared what I was doing with anybody. But like, you know, you look at D&T and you think, what can I change? And you're like, basically nothing. Jason and JR have completely, you know, perfected this, and like your galaxy brain change will be fucking with two cards on the sideboard. But like Esper Vile, you can go wherever you want, man. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And maybe 2022 will be the year of the Kallus Blood Mage. But until then, I'm gonna keep putting it in my in my decks. Quinn, your thoughts? Your deck of the year?
Still thinking of the Kallus Blood Mage line. I've also been thinking about what you said about it might not be good right now. Mm-hmm. And I actually had Tess here, which had periods where it was quite good in the right hands in 2021. And I deleted it because the two decks I enjoyed playing the most, I also cheated and put two decks, were Ant and Omni. And I'm going to cheat and put them together because of the two decks where I made heavy investments in paper. So I owned them both. But I just like playing Omnitel so much that I bought an Italian copy of Eureka. That's the only card I kind of didn't need. So I own that now. And it's just a card that exists. Sometimes it's playable, sometimes it's not. But when it's good, it's... I was going to say, when it's good, it's actually only decent. Which
I was
going to
say, that's the Gilded Drake of Omnitel.
You only need one, though.
Just wait, just wait.
Someone, yeah, wait till the Omnitel or the Eureka Arms Race starts. Suddenly they're playing four Eureka. I've resolved it like one time. I put in Emrakul, my opponent put in a land, and they were playing Ant, and then I lost the next turn.
Oh no.
Which was fine. And then with Ant, I owned Ant, but Will, a local Legacy player, and works in Magic Stronghold, was selling a bunch of his Japanese cards, and so I bought a bunch of Japanese Ant pieces, and then sold off some of my English ones. And so, you know, will it be good again? I feel like someday. It's like Ant's just a deck where like just every once in a while fits right in. And but those are the decks I had the most fun playing. Especially,
you have your Baleful Strix to complete the latest Cyrus transformation.
I do have Baleful Strixes for other reasons, so I can jam those in if I need to.
What about the Epic Slime?
Storm? Yeah, the Epic Slime. Yeah.
I also have a Progenitor Mimic? No, Progenitor Ooze, right? It's just a Progenitor Ooze? He is an Ooze.
I think so.
That's his name. Their name, I guess. That card, when you cast it, is fucked.
I mean, yo, A Creature with Storm, that's sick.
A Creature with Storm, and it gets, every copy gets bigger, which is also kind of a nightmare because I try not to carry like 20 dice around with me, but sometimes you need like 10 of them.
You're like, okay, I have 10 slime tokens and they're all progressively larger.
It was an excuse to buy 10 mock Pokemon cards though, which I think is great.
Yeah, that's good. That's something that I hope to improve on in 2022 is getting appropriate Pokemon cards for my tokens.
I've got Togepi mentors. Right. Mentor monk tokens, I guess. Not mentor tokens, monk tokens.
Why don't you have Mankey monk tokens?
Oh, that's pretty good. Togepi, it's like the card, it's like, it's, I don't know how Pokemon works at all, but it's like ability is like friendship, and I'm like, oh yeah, look at them all together getting larger in unison when I cast a ponder and then bash in. Those were the days.
This is a good batch of decks.
Moving forward, and I kind of foreshadowed this, I think the next thing we want to talk about is kind of the best moments or games, which don't have to be in paper, but I think all three of us have that. And mine is actually, it just explicitly like the first night back at Magic Stronghold for the weekly. It wasn't even like totally full, I don't think, maybe like a dozen of us, but it just felt good to like shuffle your cards again and look at your opponent while you're wheeling through a hand of air and going like, oh fuck, I'm gonna die. Never feels good online. Always feels great. You know, in paper, I'm like, oh, I'm going to die. Like, this is great. You're happy. I would be more happy if I was winning, but I'm not unhappy. You got me.
There was 1 week, like maybe it was the third or fourth week after we got back to paper, where it felt like all the people who had like not played Webcam Legacy in 2020 and not really been a part of the community all showed up randomly that night. And it was, I think there was like 16 people or something like that, like at that capacity. And it was just like, there was magic played, but it was more so just like getting back together. And it kind of, that felt really cool. That was probably like my favorite of all the nights that we got to play paper.
There was magic on the tables and in the air.
Wow.
When you talk about people though, who like just kind of weren't playing webcam, and also, I mean, just regardless, it's different to interact with humans in actual real life. There's been like a bunch of articles too, but like during COVID, it's like the, you know, you make an effort to maintain a relationship with people who are very meaningful to you. And obviously that's like important and like a primary concern. So like we have, you know, whether in person in whatever situation was safe at the time or over, you know, over Zoom or Discord or whatever, like the three of us have like talked a lot together and been together a lot, but the all these things talk about like, oh, the thing that people are like kind of like missing and don't realize it is like these like periphery interactions that mm-hmm. you actually end up like really valuing and like make a lot of people's like, you know, endorphins pop off in their brain. And I think that's like a perfect example where it's like, you know, random people you see at the magic store that maybe, you know, are not in your like inner circle of friends, but that you just enjoy for whatever reason. You don't have a close relationship because you can't have a close relationship with everyone and you run into them all the time. And like, that just stopped happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking it was like the passive relationships, you know, like the ones that are just there, like, you know, you're at the store and you're waiting to buy something in line and there's somebody you maybe seen once before and you just start casually talking because you're both waiting to, you know, buy into the event or something. And that's so valuable and you don't really realize it until it's gone.
Yeah. Being back in paper in those first few weeks were so great. For me,
the later few weeks, fuck them.
Well, no, like they were good, and you got like there was people who kind of popped in and out. Like, there's obviously people still have a lot going on right now, and there's not a lot of consistency, I guess. So we did have a lot of fluctuations in numbers and people. There's always a consistent kind of core group, and then like another five or six that would kind of come in and out. For me, I was like, I saw your note, Quinn, of just like, what was like a best moment or best game? And I was like, oh, it was really good. And I definitely have to say, when I was playing that red painter list with all the spheres and Urza's Baubles and everything, they had 5-0'd or top-aided some challenge. and I threw it together and I was missing one goblin engineer. And I was like, oh, I won that Ragavan in a pack war the other week. I'm going to just throw that in. Why not? I'm playing a red deck. It costs one red. It's a good card. It makes artifacts for my welders. Cool. And then I played against Tristan O'Loughlin and he plays a bunch of Leyline of the Voids on me and just kind of like, I think he like mulled low and then Leylined. There's a bunch of, and then I also played a Saga and something else, an artifact, and he, I think it was a Grindstone, and he, what's the Force of Vigor? And he just kind of like blows up and decimates my whole board. And I get the Ragavan into play and then just like go to town with the Ragavan and it creates all the mana that I need to continue playing the game. And I start playing a bunch more Goblin Welders off of the treasure tokens. And at the end of the game, I'm just swinging in with like three Goblin Welders and a Ragavan. And he's like, literally the only card that saved you was this Ragavan. And I was like, yeah, I just casually threw it in the deck. And it was just like one of those really, really random kind of events that transpired. And it wasn't an amazing game or anything like that, but it was just an odd and enjoyable game. So that came to mind.
That's great.
What about for you, Jeff?
You know, I was racking my brain trying to think about this, and I couldn't really remember any specific games. There's lots of individual good moments, like hearing about Quinn getting double stifled. That's always fun. You know, the first few, like, pack wars coming back to Stronghold, seeing the same crew, seeing, like, the, you know, other people you're talking about. People like, you know, Cody and his brother, people like Alan, Trevor, everybody out there. Lots of fun. But I think what I had to settle on was the first, I guess, Canthresh Open. You know, we got, eight of us together and at my apartment's like rec room. It was basically when we were like finally somewhat free to see people we know in a, you know, decent circumstance. And just sitting down with people to play like a paper Magic tournament was awesome. And like, it sucks to like go, I think I was dead last or maybe second last in, you know, the tournament I'm hosting at my house, but it was such a good time to just sit down and watch Akash just like roll over me with a green post deck. He hasn't changed at all. I'm over here with all my new toys, sleeving up my fucking 6 foot tall deck. And he's just like, Candelabra, make fucking 20 mana, kill you. That was just so much fun. And, you know, seeing everybody, it comes with all his other goodness. You know, just everybody there, the event, such a good time. Lots of fun. And I hope we can do that in a larger area in the next year.
When you mentioned Akash, and I was thinking of like best moments or best games. A few weeks ago, Akash and I played, and I was playing D&T, as I kind of alluded to earlier. And I played Keldra against him. And I was just like, okay, do you know what this card does? He's like, yeah, it's a 5/5, right? And I was like, read the card. And
this
then
is a
like,
man who has Dismember in his hand.
And then read it again. And he sits there and he reads it. And then like he was playing 8-cast. And like over the course of what seemed like half an hour, he had to read the card like 6 times because he kept like doing something. And then I'm like, yeah, that doesn't work. Like, and he's like, okay. And he would like want to take something back. I'm like, yeah, sure, that's fine. And then like 2 turns later, a different rules text would come up on the card. He's like, yes, first strike. Oh my God. And then, like, later he's like, the germ is like indestructible. What? Everything's indestructible. Like, it was just every single thing that could come up came up. And I was like, I told you to read the content card.
There's a lot of text on that card.
Oh yeah. And it's, I still am catching myself. Like, you have to like, I feel you have to use it yourself mm-hmm. to really understand it, like where it can fit in and where it can't fit in. But yeah, it's a, It's a cart for sure.
I should add also best moments slash games. Anytime I was playing in like a real tournament on Magic Online and my opponent tries to destroy Kaldra is a very good moment.
Oh, yeah.
You just see, you know, the confident speed, click, 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 boom, you know, a braid. And then it's like the pause. So good.
Yeah. Kind of transitioning into maybe favorite cards. For me, as much as I was just talking about Kaldra, it's not my favorite card. It's one of those like everything soup cards. It's a bit of a fire card, but the one that really spoke to me in Modern Horizons 2 that came out was Dress Down. That when I saw that, I was like, this feels like an old card. And it was just like it's a unique effect, and the whole like removes at end of turn and being an enchantment and all that is really cool. It felt kind of like the whole Underworld Breach effect where it's almost a spell, but it's not a spell.
Mm-hmm.
And removes at the beginning of the end step, not end of turn, is a well, sure, key yes. function.
Yeah, I know it's key.
It makes it like, oh, sometimes the EOT. You know, like your opponent's just like, it goes away. Like, it doesn't go away. Don't next turn. Oh, so my Thalia, then that doesn't do anything anymore. Sorry.
Yeah. So like, it's one of those things where the rules text lets it have so many options to do things. Like you can stop your Doomsday opponent from winning, but then you can also like, if you're the Storm player, like blank their team and then untap and go off. Like there's so many things you can do, or even just killing a whole bunch of Urza Saga's tokens.
Cast your own Phyrexian Dreadnought.
Cast your own Phyrexian Dreadnought. Probably the coolest use. And then you save their Stifle, or you save your Stifle for something later. But
I have a good choice. You get a Null Rod on legs. Now you have 2/2/2s. Congratulations.
The amount of times I've like cast like a Recruiter Guard, and I'm like, they got nothing. They got nothing. And they just cast the Dress Down, and you're like, I just played a 3-on-1/1 that does nothing. Like, this sucks.
Yeah.
And my opponent drew a card too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was free. And like you said, it's a kind of weird space too, where it's an enchantment versus like, you know, it could easily be like an instant or something. And it's just like until end of turn, you know, Torpor Orb plus, you know, they lose abilities. It's interesting too that it exists in a year with Saga, because I think it probably would have gone a little more under the radar if Saga didn't exist and he didn't just have a way to like kill all of the threats that a lot of decks are putting out. But I mean, it's like at its worst case scenario, it's basically like a one shot, but cheaper and better. What the hell is that card that's in High Tide sometime? You're just asking about this. You choose like artifact land or creature.
Oh, the phasing one?
Yeah.
It's a Fairy's Realm, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Like it's basically an updated version of that. And it's a really cool card.
You can just see R&D sitting around a table, like they throw Teferi's Realm on the table, like we need a newer one of these.
fix this, please.
Yeah.
What about you, Quinn? Was there a particular favorite card that stood out to you this year?
Dress Down's a good one. I think Witherbloom Apprentice is one I thought of initially too.
Mm.
I like anything that opens up a shitty combo space. But speaking of shitty combo spaces, 5-0. Yeah. Shitty combo, or I guess good combo spaces, Galvanic Relay. So we got some storm cards, some real storm cards, some that were kind of like that big dinosaur guy, which was like, really, that's a payoff. Ave actually overperformed, but Galvanic Relay is just like, you know, your opponent is like waiting for you to like cast the tutor, you know, after you cast 5 spells, and I said you Galvanic Relay as your 6th spell and Galvanic Relay for 6. And then you just get another shot at it. There's just a lot of like weird lines that it opens up against, especially like controlling decks. That has been super cool for storm decks. It's like not too pushed, which is surprising considering it has storm stapled onto it.
Right. I was going to say, like, who would have thought in 2021 they would print an interesting storm card that's not busted?
Yeah.
And they managed to print 2.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Abe's like interesting, but it's not busted. It's just strong enough.
It's like semi interesting, like the way it goes about what it does, you know?
Yeah.
But galvanic relay is like this super interesting space where it's like, you know, intriguing. It does things in multiple spots. The ability to just spew out a bunch of shit and then relay to fill up is like super cool.
Especially when you're playing against a black deck and you relay a bunch of good cards and then you pass and there's like a long pause on Magic Online and you're like, oh, did you draw Thoughtseize? I bet that looks good right now. Empty hand and seven cards are going to play next turn. But it's as fair as, you know, like a storm mechanic can be. I think it's a pretty fair card. And it's like weird decisions that you can make and plays around certain stuff and is bad in other places. It's just like a really, I think, well-designed Magic card with the mechanic mm-hmm. that has traditionally been like, you know, just not well-designed in general.
Yeah.
Jeff, you got a good one.
I was thinking this is interesting because we all ended up with Modern Horizons 2 cards, which seems kind of funny. So the thing I had originally written down here, which is probably, you know, in terms of like power level, probably the most applicable card to the decks that I like to play, which would be Solitude. But that feels kind of like cheating. Everybody knows Solitude's good. That's not, you know, that interesting. And it has opened up so many things to be able to just like, oh, nice Emrakul, I don't care. Oh, the Thalia, I can't pay for this. It's a creature, don't care. Solitude's great. But I'm a man that likes my little machinery pieces, you know? And my boy Timeless Dragon is fantastic. It's my favorite kind of card that comes in to Legacy, where it's not really powerful, it just kind of stretches the gap. You know, it has a few different modes that all do things you want, and it's extra fun that like 60 card DNT, no space for Timeless Dragon, but 80 card DNT, all of a sudden playing two looks great. You have the consistency for your mana, you have a threat you can put in the bin. It also lines up really well against so many other things in the format, and it basically doesn't really cost you anything. It's just such a sweet card, and like it's in that spot, kind of like Galvanic Relay, where like it's just well designed. Like the mechanics it has together and it puts together work well. It could easily have been some stupid Modern Horizons 2 card that's like undercosted, and like the thing it makes, even if you just internalize it, is also easily removed through, you know, certain methods. Like, yeah, you'd have to double bolt it or like trade, but you can bounce it with a million different things that are in the format, and then it's like the value that I got was just the land out of it and I tapped out. So it's very balanced, it's very unassuming, and I just love these cards that come in and, you know, you put one or two copies in a deck just to kind of keep things moving. That's what I would just love to see.
It doesn't break a standstill. I'm sad you mentioning like we all picked Modern Horizons 2 cards.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, it's like, oh, see, they printed great cards, which I think is like undisputable. But because it was in the set with Urza's Saga and Ragavan, it wasn't like, oh, Standstill got a new card. Like, well, Standstill right. got three new cards, and actually, this one's the shittiest. But conceptually, it's so cool to be like, I'm going to make a land drop. You know, I'm going to like plane cycle this, end of turn, make my land drop. And that's how I like get under the standstill, is I'm going to eternalize, which is not casting a spell, my Timeless Dragon. And now, even if you have a bounce spell, like you can go ahead and I'm going to Ancestral Recall. Like, it's just that interaction is so sweet. And I wish mm-hmm. it hadn't just been like, you know, people tried it. And then it was just kind of like, oh, actually, we can just play like Ragavan or the Saga and standstill instead and still draw three cards. And that's like a bit of a bummer, because this is way the finesse is there.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
An interesting thing, like, so going back 2 years now, when we were doing our year in review in 2019, we actually were picking Modern Horizons as like the best set, mm-hmm. even though it came with like three or four real stinkers that were just too good. There were so many cool, like B+, A- cards.
Sling Gang Lieutenant.
There was just so many cards, and we're like, mm-hmm. oh, these are awesome. And they were like just the right spot. And it feels like this, like the three cards that we just discussed, Dress Down, Galvanic Relay, Timeless Dragon, like, and several others in Modern Horizons were like right in that spot. Mm-hmm. It's like, these are awesome. why do those four exist? And, you know, it, so it does speak to like, there can be cool cards that mm-hmm. have just the right amount of balance to them. And it's like, do more of that. Stop pushing like these mythics and all this crap. And like everything draws a card fire policy, but like there's some really cool, interesting stuff that they can do.
I don't want to take us too far on a tangent, but I hadn't really thought of this before. I was always just like Modern Horizons was worse. Because I just think of like Red and Six, where I'm like, God, like a Planeswalker, which is a thing I still just like. Look, I get they exist. I don't like them. And I never will. As a 40-year-old man now, I will never love Planeswalkers. I'm sorry. But McBain, when you're like, there are a bunch of good cards and then a bunch of cards that were bad, there was really only Red and Six. I think you could make a case.
Astrolabe.
Oh, Astrolabe. Yeah, okay. And then in Legacy, I think you made a case that like we don't need eight forces. You know, but I understand that they wanted to put force into Modern, which may or may not be good. I don't really pay attention to Modern enough to make a statement on that. But like, it's similar to True Name Nemesis we talked about before the cast. It's like, it is reasonable in the format it was intended for, and then it bleeds into Legacy. That's what Legacy's for. Sorry, you have to take those mistakes. And so Force Negation, I'm like, I give that a pass. It's like Ren and Six and Astrolabe, and all the other cards are like pretty reasonable.
Yeah,
like Plague Engineer is totally fine, right? Especially after the Plague
Engineer. Oh, I forgot about Plague Engineer.
They always forget about Plague Engineer.
And then, I do until someone plays against me. No one plays black anymore.
Exactly. But yeah, like Ice Fang and Hex Drinker, Hogak. Like there was a lot.
Engineer.
Oh yeah, there's. I was like, having played Painter a little bit recently, I just continue to be impressed with Goblin Engineer. There's some really cool lines you can do with that card.
Goblin Engineer is so sick because it's like, sorry, just a brief interruption. Because it's like it by itself does one thing, and that thing it does is kind of cool. But then it combined with the Welder, you just pop off, and it's so cool.
There was one game playing against you where I was still like really rusty. And I'm sitting there and I have both welders in play and you just like scoop up your cards. You're like, good game. And I was like, I hadn't even put the line together yet. I was like, what do you mean? You're like, well, you can do this and it stops two removal effects and I can't do anything. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess you're right. You are dead.
So speaking of problem cards, I think the existence of Griselbrand makes whatever I'm going to suggest here strictly worse than what you could be doing.
Mm-hmm.
But is there like a black, red welder, engineer, entomb, reanimate deck where you get like Sundering Titan, like Sphinx? They need to print some like busted ass 12 mana artifact creature. Yeah, it's
Bolas of Citadel.
So I have Citadel,
but you can't exhume Bolas of Citadel.
So I have played this deck. I have tried to like brew in this space, and specifically like there was an old vintage deck in like from 15 years ago that was called 710. And it was just make Sundering Titans over and over again. And you had welders and reanimate effects. And I think you may have even had like this side World Gorger line in it. But like the main thing was just like 710s. And I've tried to do it and it just feels really awkward. And just feels like there's other better things you can be doing. But most certainly there is a black red welder reanimate deck that exists.
Well, there's like
cruelty like artifact. Yeah, if that, what's that one mana thing that draws you cards, the white card,
one mana white card that draws you cards,
Esper Sentinel. If Esper Sentinel can be like a human and artifact, then Archon of Cruelty should be an artifact too. That's all I'm saying.
Artifact of Cruelty. But there is like the Caleb Durward, like mono red, like Duretti welder engineer deck that was kind of popping off for a little bit. I mean, I think 5-0 like a few times.
There's definitely a bunch of painter lists that are black red, and you can have some fun with it. I kept wanting to like put Dark Confidant in there because like just the fuel that you could have, but then you have those like, you obviously want to play like one Bolas of Citadel and one Sundering Titan at least. So there's those.
I'm asking if you've read the flavor text on Dark Confidant.
I have for sure. And of course,
so what's the problem?
Confidence, that their confidence I had. Well, you, back in the day in vintage, like it used to just be you'd have your one Dark Steel Colossus and your four Dark Confidence and four Force Wills. And that's just the magic you were playing. And I think it was even like one vintage world championship, like one of the deciding games, the guy just reveals Dark Steel Colossus. Anyway, we're going on a far tangent here. So Jeff, what was your kind of on this topic? What was your favorite set of the year?
I was going to say, let me go first. That was me
making you go first. So
good job. I put a large caveat in here. And in some respects, after we're talking about this, I think I kind of have to slightly take this caveat back. So I said four limited, all in capitals, Modern Horizons 2. Because much like Modern Horizons 1, the limited format is great. There's so many things going on. It's so fun to play. There's that sealed event coming up on the 1st I'm looking forward to. Like it's just so much fun to play all these sets where they chuck all the mechanics together and you get to see like, you know, new legendary cards, new mechanics working together in ways that they hadn't before, like Plane Psychic and Internalize. And even for non-limited, there's some sweet cards in there. And, you know, I really like the spots where they get to flex their design muscles. I just hate when they fucking pop the shirt off too. what do you guys think about Modern Horizons 2?
It's not even my favorite limited format. I'll say that.
Of the year?
A preview to my favorite set.
I've said this before. I don't typically get into limited unless I like really get into limited. And the only set that I really got into limited for this year was Kaldheim.
Mm-hmm.
And partially that was for like, I've always kind of wanted that set for like 20 plus years. I've always kind of wanted that kind of theme of a set. So when I heard it was coming, I was just like, oh, I knew I have to play this set. And then it also turned out to just be like a really, really good draft set for a standard level set that wasn't some Masters something. So I played a lot of that. Like I actually like booted up Arena and played a shit ton on that. We played some like sealed booster pack leagues over webcam, all sorts of stuff. I had a freaking awesome time playing Kaldheim. And it was for a long time, it was a really like unsolved. Like there was just so many things you could be doing in Kaldheim. And then later in the game, it was just like, oh, are you on like red, white, or on some kind of like snow soup deck? But there was no real like structure to the snow soup decks. They were just so wild. But leaving the really solved part aside, Kaldheim was awesome. And I loved the flavor of it and the design and everything. So
I like seeing five color being like a supported archetype in like an actual limited thing too. Like just spamming like Path to the World trees. And you know, you're sitting there like trying to hold the ground with your shitty walls.
Eventually they'll make bears.
Yeah, exactly. Just you wait. I'm going to pay a shitload of mana, shoot someone for two, make a bear. I'm set. Also being a set that has like kind of a dream set of combos in it with stuff like there's an artifact that makes changelings and it makes everything like conspiracies, everything in your deck to be a changeling.
What is that card?
Burrows or something. Barrows.
Yeah, it's a 4-mana artifact. And
yeah, birthing barrows. But playing that and then playing the world tree, like this is never going to happen in limited, but if it does, the activated thing on the world tree where you can search your deck for all of the gods and put them into play. So you have this thing which makes all of your deck changelings, and then you can just find every creature in your deck and put it into play by sacking this land. Like, it's never going to happen, but just chucking those kind of, you know, like achievement level goals in the same set is like so sick.
There was so much depth to the thing. I really enjoyed it. And I imagine like probably some of the other sets that were released were like in that realm of awesome complexity and enjoyment, but I knew I wouldn't have time to do them. So I just didn't even participate. I didn't listen to any LR or anything like that. I just didn't even pay them any attention. So by virtue, Kaldheim's my favorite set because it's the only one that I really, it's spent a lot of time on. Quinn, what about you?
Mine is Innistrad Midnight Hunt, which was also my favorite limited set. It was actually like pretty on rails. You wanted to be preferably in blue, black, or if not that, blue or black, I think. But the gameplay was some of the funnest actual games I've played in limited in, I don't know, as long as I can remember. All the games felt like, even if you had like a really like a deck where you're like, this deck's a 10 out of 10, you still had situations where you're like, whoa, I barely won that one. There were a lot of like really weird like combat things that would happen and pretty intricate things. There was actually 1.5 cards that made it into Legacy, maybe like 1.75. Teferi, Who Slows the Sunset. We have played in Legacy, but I'm going to give that a quarter mark.
Yeah, McBain, I'm grimacing.
Yeah. McBain, Ren and Seven had maybe like a brief moment where people tried it in lands. I'm going to give that a half, but Malevolent Hermit sees play in Sneak and Show. It does do one of those things where it's like cards can't be countered, which is never my like favorite thing on its flip side. But that combined with how much I enjoyed the limited format really put it over the top for me. There's also just like a lot of cool cards that aren't powerful enough for Legacy, but are pretty sweet. And since I've been playing a lot of Arena over the last couple of years, that kind of like pushed it over the edge, I think. If you like to play lower power formats in Legacy, Memory Deluge, oof, a blue player stream.
Oh, dude, I played a decent amount of the Taking Turns deck in Standard, and Deluge is always so busted.
Oh, the second time? Like, you just win. It's take through time.
Although, there's a few times when I was playing the deck to start out, and I was like, you know, it's going to be good. If I cast Galvanic Iteration and then I cast Memory Deluge, I'll get 4 cards. This is insane. Don't do that.
I did that today. There's like the midweek Magic format is Singleton and nothing is banned. And I got greedy, and instead of just Galvanic Iterationing like a Time Walk effect, I did that to my Memory Deluge because I'm like, I'm just going to draw 4 cards. I'm going to draw additional Time Walks. I'm going to flashback the iteration later. This is so good. And yeah, the second one resolves. We should probably explain this, right?
Yeah, because I don't think McBain's familiar.
So Memory Deluge is 2 and 2 blue. So it's a 4-mana spell. Look at the top X cards of your library, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast this spell.
Yeah, some key text there.
Key text. But 2 of them in your hand rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. So on its face, it's an instant 2, which helps because obviously if you're blue, you can be holding counter magic or whatever. On its face, like, it's pretty good for Standard. It flashes back for 7. And so then you literally get to dig through time on the second half. If you copy it, the copy costs 0. So X is 0.
You get to take 2 cards out of the top 0.
Yeah. I should say also, I did this today. I've done this more than once.
Oh, yeah.
But today was the most recent time where I'm like, oh, I'm so smart. I'm going to get 14 cards. Take 4 of them. I didn't do that. I still won the match, though. Because blue cards are good. Also, my favorite card of this year in Magic is Smoldering Egg.
That's a good one, too.
It's 1 in a red. Again, not Legacy playable, but it's 1 in a red for an 0/4. I think it has Defender, too. Yes, it does. And whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you put counters on it equal to the CMC of that spell, or whatever you pay to cast that spell. So I guess it kind of plays well with like Thalia effects. And then when you have 7 counters, it flips into a 4/4, and every time you cast an instant or sorcery, it just domes anything for 2. And it's really like the 2 sides of my Magic personality, where like doing fucking nothing and then being just like absurdly aggressive. And there was a deck in Standard that played this where you got to just do nothing, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, now I kill you. My whole hand. So that's my favorite side of the year.
That's a good card. I remember one of those cubes they had up. I think it was maybe the Live the Dream cube. I had drafted a Storm deck, and one of my 2 Storm kills was playing Smoldering Egg and then just fucking going off.
Oh, that's sweet. Just playing Rituals?
Yeah. That's so good. Yeah, that's a good set.
I think we're going to zoom out now. Just favorite magic thing in general? Jeff, you want to start?
Oh, I mean, it's got to be Retro Borders. I mean, I was trying to think about it. This actually started this year, right? Time Spiral Remastered was the first set to do
Time Spiral Remastered came out after Keldheim. There were Retro Borders beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so there was
like the judge one promos.
The one like that comes Crucible. To mind was the Crucible. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is gorgeous. And like,
which, like, the when you saw it, it was like, when are they making more of these? Like, you knew that it was possible. They had the little star on there, and it was just like, push the button.
Yeah.
Push the button and print more of these cards.
So seeing those is just so fucking good. Like, opening the packs of Time Spiral Remastered or like Modern Horizons 2 or whatever, and seeing these cards, even if like they're not foiled, they look so nice, and so many of the art and stuff they have like fit the old border so well. You just look at it and you're like, this is it. Like, old border Timeless Dragon has got the little gravestone because it's like got flashback. Like, it's so cool. And obviously this year they went fucking insane with the amount of like different variations of printings and stuff they did, and even trying to look at like, do I want to get some old border fetch lands? It's like, oh well, there's etched foils, there's unetched, like, it's a mess. But the core of that and just the retro stuff looks so good. And like, it's a shame that I already own some of these fetch lands that I now feel like I have to replace with old border ones, and things like chalices that I own, I feel like I now need to get these old border ones because they're just gorgeous.
I should have bought chalices when they're $40. I made a mistake.
What are they now?
A lot more expensive, and also regular chalices is a lot more expensive because of Regavan.
Huh.
I think.
I guess I'm
assuming maybe other one drops in Modern too, but
I lucked out there because I was like, I bought up new, like the retro ones. Mm-hmm. I was collecting a playset of those, and I was like, oh well, I'll just sell the like the Mirrodin ones I have. And then I just never got around to it. So now I just have a whole bunch of
so now
ooh.
Classic Magic price. Investments. I forgot to sell them. They're more expensive.
They're both $70. Also, Quinn, point of order, Chalice in Modern is to cast it on zero to stop these Cascade deck.
Oh.
Yeah.
It looks really weird because you see these like blue-white like control-looking decks, and then you see Chalice, and you're like, this doesn't make sense.
But it's still cool, though, like to be able to get to a late stage in the game and be like, oh, I know three matters, so I'm just going to Chalice on three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, the old border cards. Oh my God, like the Thoughtseize.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I can't think of I couldn't think of a way previously that they could make going a black source Thoughtseize you on turn one feel any better until I was like, oh, and it's beautiful. Sorry, in your hand? Yeah, I'll just take that one. And look at, have you seen how what they did? It's just like the art fits. And your opponent's just like, fuck off, take two damage.
Yeah, that's what I got. Quinn, what do you got for a favorite Magic thing for the year?
I finished my cube. The Hasbro cube.
Tell us about, I want to explain your cube.
I believe Pascal Maynard, I read the article, so he introduced me to it for sure. I believe he also is the person who kind of like invented it. And it is, and this will be understandable to anyone who's listened to more than like two episodes of this podcast, me as like the chief complainer about new shit. It's the old man yells at clouds cube. There are no planeswalkers. I believe Pascal more elegantly put it as magic as it used to be. There are very powerful spells in it. I think some powerful implement you make some tweaks. But it's not like a thing where you play a three drop, and if your opponent can enter it, it just like spirals out of control for the most part. It's like a lot of like Flame Tongue Cavu is as powerful as you want to believe it is if you played Magic, you know, when Flame Tongue Cavu was a card. And so, yeah, luckily I bought a lot of reserve list cards before, you know, the shitty reserve list cards popped off. And so I had those, but I actually finished it up. Made some upgrades to some of the art. And then we did get one chance to play it live in person before we're back in the pseudo lockdown we find ourselves in again.
That was so good. I love that cube, and I can't wait to do it again.
I just like looking at the cards too. Like, I'm not going to lie, when I'm organizing Magic cards, sometimes I just pull that box of organized cards out and thumb through them and like, oh, remember this one? Just me talking to myself.
That was even when you brought it out and we just opened the packs, it was just like, oh my God, this is incredible.
I remember playing this at the store championship. Like,
yeah. This actually came up. So my favorite thing was just cubing with friends. And one of the highlights for that was definitely with your cube, Quinn. And I remember when we drove down, we were going to Lensick's place and you were in the back seat and Elliot was in the front with me. And you would just like take a card out of the has-been cube and you would be like, and you'd give one hint of what the card was. And then Elliot and I would try to guess what the card was. And each time you would add like one more clue. And that just reminded me of like, you know, back in the day when you're a little kid and you're doing almost the exact same thing. And just over holidays, like my mom remarked, like during dinner or something like that, or when we were just hanging out, she's like, remember when you and like your friends would just like remember all these cards and you would be like, oh, what's like, you know, the one black and two. And she's like, yeah, you just do that all the time. And I was like, Mom, I literally did that like 3 weeks ago.
we do that now.
Yeah. She's like, yeah, you were always like, your memory was so good with all that stuff. I can't believe like you still remember all. I was like, yes, I still remember all of it. Like, if you ask me what like Plague Spitter does, I can tell you what Plague Spitter does. So yeah. And I think Plague Spitter is in the cube, if I'm not mistaken, but maybe not.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Thrashing Wumpus, I'm pretty sure, is in there.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Anyway, so that was my kind of like favorite Magic thing. I hadn't cubed in a while, or I rarely did it, but I felt like with the whole like webcam thing and like the consistency of Legacy being a little bit more ephemeral, when the cubing things came along, I definitely jumped on them and they were highly enjoyable. So do more of that.
Yeah, I can't wait until we can do another cube.
Yeah. So let's kind of kick in towards like the end of the show here. And before we end on a high note, as we like to do, we're going to end on a bit of a, what I assume is going to be a bit of a low note.
It could be a high note. You don't know.
And well, no. So this segment was going to be, or is going to be, defining cards of Legacy in 2021. So I went back again, as you mentioned, and actually looked at the show notes, because from last year, I was like, what did we put for a divining card of in 2020 for Legacy? Any guesses on what it was?
Oh, the years are like blurring together.
I was going to say Underworld Breach.
So it was defining card of 2020 for Legacy, in brackets, that's not banned.
Shit.
What came in 2020?
Oko.
Uro is correct.
Oko was, yeah, 2019, right?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Late 2019. Uro came out like start of 2020.
I might buy Uros. I have it in my cart.
No, don't do it.
There's just so many decks where I look at them, like, have every single card, except it's like, it's got three Uros, and I skip it, and I'm like, fuck.
Don't scab.
Wow.
Quinn, what do you think for defining card of Legacy in 2021?
I was going to say, I haven't sang the song yet. I mean, we'll be singing a song that everyone will have heard by the time they get to this part of the podcast, about everyone's favorite pirate monkey, who just, he got such a buff. He just used to come into play and disappear, and now he does it all. His thievery. Wait. Who do you think the greatest thief in the multiverse is in 2021? Of all the thieves that exist.
One of them is dead.
One of them's Dak Faden. He's already dead. He's already dead, and they did this to us. Ragavan the Nimble Pilferer. I don't want to get into should it be banned, shouldn't it be banned, what's the power level, but I think it's relatively inarguable that it was just everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everyone had strong feelings about it. I think even the people who are like, I don't really mind Ragavan that much, like, you're just saying that because you wanted to have a thing to say. Like, everyone had like a definitive opinion on Ragavan. And I don't know, when you hit someone with it, you're like, oh, that's fucked up. And when you get hit with it, you know, a lot of times you're like, oh, that's fucked up. A wild magic card.
I have to say, though, I think we said this last time. When you know you don't give a shit when it hits you, it feels so good. You're just like, yeah, go ahead, oh. Sure.
Oh, you do a good ponder, and by good ponder, you're just like, sure, take it.
When it hits you, like you're playing D&T, you're like, yeah, fucking 90% of my cards don't do anything for you. Go for it. But then they hit like a Mother of Runes, and you're just like, oh.
Or like Source of Plowshares.
Oh. And just like Ragavan hitting, like you're against Doomsday, and you just like hit him. It's like, oh, that's his Oracle. Cool.
See, I mean, the opposite of that is when you're playing Ant and they hit a fetch land, and you're just like, yes, it could have literally been any card, and it would have been a nightmare, except the fetch land. Got him.
I think that, like, far and away is like, you know, if you look at 2021 the calendar, just what's that gonna be? It's the Ragavan year.
What is the actual like zodiac here?
Honestly, donkey?
Isn't it rooster?
It's the ox. Wow,
I was close
once again. Oh, that's play design that's fucked up year. By not synchronizing it with the year of the monkey.
That would have been, been.
So what was 36 well, no, the then,
this ox year? Ox of Argonius.
No, I was going to say the plow ox.
Oh,
remember the Kaldheim?
Yeah,
the mighty plow or whatever. That was speaking of sweet combos. That actually happened every once in a while.
Yeah, I would call it sweet, but it was good. We're far from Year of Monkey. For the record,
what do we have to beware next year?
Tiger,
the zodiac count tiger. Fuck, shit. Keep your eyes open.
Do you think they'll do cool shit for Year of the Dragon? Now that we're on the topic,
Ship and Dragon reprint.
We know they'll do cool shit for Year of the Horse. We talked about all the horses. Tarpan, the next Tarpan is going to be fucked. One green mana just does everything. But I digress. Jeff, what's your defining legacy card?
Tarpan. My de facto legacy card is Urza Saga. It's probably the one I think specifically, if you were to pick a card that I've complained about the most this year, is probably Urza Saga. and I think it's right there behind Ragavan as like something that's just so ubiquitous and like just sucks.
I don't think it's more powerful than Ragavan. And I'm not like strong on that. So no one on Reddit that I don't read yell at me. But it is the most like current era WotC design card because it's the one that we know. They were like, oh, we didn't test it, which is so just like, of course you did. Like, yeah, the second construct, didn't think about that, did you? On the stack. No one understands the stack, so I get it. You didn't put the trigger on the stack, I get it.
Yeah, and like it's
I try not to get too hung up with something. I try not to get too hung up with the I didn't test it thing. Like,
why not?
That's we didn't job. Think about elking there's somebody so, else's like, creatures.
There's so there's always some kind of I didn't test it story for a lot of cards. Where
and that's they, bad.
Like, I know, but it's just like you keep bringing it up. I'm like, yeah, you could say that about like every single card where they're like, oh yeah, we kind of tested this and then we made this tweak to it and that's what made it incredibly broken, but we never tested it because it was like late in the print run or whatever. And
it's a rare. It's the first card they spoil.
I'm missing the part where I see like how you turn this around on us and we shouldn't complain about this.
No, you can complain away. Like, I don't know. It just feels like everyone's like shocked and like, oh my God, they didn't test it. It's like, yeah, it's a broken card in Legacy. They didn't test it.
No, it's a broken card in every format. It's in.
They made it specifically for Modern. They didn't even test it for that. I'm fine if they're like, we forgot that it like has a weird interaction with Chrome Mox or something, or like,
yeah, right. It's like, oh, I never thought about Animate Dead and World Gorger Drag.
Yeah, like if Standstill became tier one and they're like, well, we didn't really test for Standstill, I'd be like, that's fair. They're just like, we didn't really test all the modes very much. Like,
yeah, because it's not even in combination with anything else. It's not like a breach, you know, LED situation.
Yeah, breach LED,
it's
like, look, yeah, breach had to be banned. Sure, you fucking printed a card. It's actually pretty cool. and you weren't like, yeah, some idiot's going to be like loop LED and then brain freeze you, that's fine. That's not your fault.
The text on the card.
Yeah. The three
you open the file. It's so one card long.
I'm thinking of Death Rite Shaman right now and how they did test it. And then the change that they made was the bad change.
Sure.
Where they're like, oh, we don't want it to die to like,
but even
electricity or whatever it was. Even Death Rite, so we're going to.
Like, Death Rite should, I mean, now I think it's kind of arguable. Death Rite should have been banned when it got banned. Death Rite's fine and standard with fetch lands.
Mm-hmm.
Death Rite's, they made a magic card and they were like, oh, it kept dying in standards. So we had tacked on extra toughness. And that was bad for Legacy. And so they had to ban in Legacy. That's okay. Well,
it was banned in Modern. Like,
it was banned in Modern too. But, you know, like, that's okay too.
As a.
Their focus was on standard. And then they tested it for the format they were making the card for. And I'm fine with that.
As another example of some testing that happened but was bad, was do you ever hear the story about why Siege Rhino has Trample?
No.
So there's in the future league, they had a deck that existed that played this card. I think it's called First Response or something. And it's like at the end of your turn or end of a turn, if you lost life that turn, you get a 1/1 soldier. It's like a enchantment. And in their future league, this card was running away with games because it was in the format of pain lands. So it's just you have this thing and every turn you just pain land yourself to make a 1/1.
This format of common enchantment.
In order to make their, you know, rare Siege Rhino be able to rumble with this generating one token a turn, they gave it trample. So really, this just comes down to maybe part of what you're saying, McBain, which is that you can't really care if they don't test, because when they do test, it's not necessarily proof they're going to do anything correct.
At least they tried.
But like, this should all just be a bigger story of like, just fucking figure out how to get people who can test properly. Like, again, you don't have to figure out these bizarre multi-card interactions, just the individual card. Oko can target other people's things. Or is a saga can make a second construct. Like, come on.
I'm gonna do McBain a solid because he's making that face where he wants us to move forward. I'm gonna move us forward by saying they did test his card because they nerfed it. Which is shocking.
I don't know that story. So after you talk, McBain, enlighten me.
I think it was quite early, but McBain, go ahead.
Mine, I think it's like the ultimate sleeper card, and it'll be with us for a long time and continue to shape the format. I think it's like strongly shaping the format right now, and that's Prismatic Ending. Like, there's so many. When I went back and I looked at like 2020 decks, I don't know why someone would want to do that to themselves, but I did it anyway. And there was all sorts of weird cards. Like, I remember like Klothys was like this, like,
Klothys was so late good.
Game control breaker card, where you could just like run away with things because they couldn't answer Klothys.
How do you deal with this?
And like Carpet was this like $1 million card, and people were just jamming Carpet of Flowers in the decks because it's like, how do you deal with this?
Sir, I still the library Carpet of Flowers
was so good. Like, there was all these like obscure things, or like Aether Vial was insane. All these awesome things that now Prismatic Ending is just like herp derp. It's gone.
And Prismatic Ending a white card the same way that Death Rite Shaman is a green card.
Exactly. The color pie is complete. Yeah, it is secretly like shaping the Legacy metagame through all this stuff, and it's gonna continue to do so. I think, like, it's not at that level where it's just like, this is egregious and it needs to be banned. It's just like, you need to consider this. And you're now seeing people play these like 4 and 5 mana sticky permanents that generate like tokens or some kind of value over time because of exactly Prismatic Ending. And you need to have something that can just, you get into the late game, you resolve your whatever card it is, and then you're like, there, now I'm going to win. And your stupid Prismatic Endings aren't going to save you. But
talked about this a bit when we were just meeting to talk about Joe's article for the panel. And like prismatic ending, I agree with everything you're saying. It's I really, really don't like the card because it feels like you shouldn't just have an answer for like anything and everything that you can just slap in all of these decks. As soon as, you know, some things that are historically sticky permanents to deal with are easy to get rid of, I think you lose a lot of value in a lot of interesting space. But what we talked about is like prismatic ending is the kind of mistake that ends up just living in Legacy. Like you said, it's not egregious enough where you have to ban it. And if it's one of those things, if you saw it on the ban list too, you'd be kind of looking like, I'm not really sure why that's there. But I think in practice, you just think like, this sucks. And I don't know. In my opinion, it kind of turns, it's a bad effect on the format. And it's unfortunate that it's not going to go anywhere. Because I like having some stuff be sticky. And I recognize, you know, getting rid of Aether Vials, sure. Like, I'll take that hit. That's fine. It's strong. Stick an artifact. Artifacts are relatively easy to get rid of as it is. But, like, there was kind of a magic in enchantments being, like, you know, you need something specific. Like, you need somebody who's playing, like, Abrupt Decay, or maybe they're playing some oddball, like, when lands will play, like, Ray of Revelation or something. Like, flip over it. You know, like, just these specific, hard-to-deal-with permanents. We're a really interesting niche where like there's deck building restrictions and costs if you want to be prepared for them.
It dumbs down the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's like a lot of stuff that has happened in Magic that in my opinion has done that, which to me makes it a worse game. Like the reason I still, you know, with a long break in between, but like almost 30 years later. And so like, this is like, this massive part of my life, and like I don't play other games a lot because I just would rather play Magic, even a form I don't like very much, like Standard, you know, online, is because Magic's the best fucking game. And the reason it's always felt like that to me is because like I always felt like I'll never be good enough at it because it's hard. And prismatic ending, it like rewards you for like you run it and you don't need to know the format as well. You know,
I thought you were going to say it makes you realize how bad you really are when you're playing with prismatic ending and like how good of a card it is. And you still,
yeah. Well, that too, it makes you just where you're like, oh, I think I was supposed to counter that instead of let it go. Cause now it's like running away. And you're like, oh, well, prismatic ending, you know, like, it's
yeah.
To me, but it's a thing too. I think perception wise, people aren't as upset about it because you see a thing that either has been here for a long time, it's overpowered, or it's like a new card. You know, someone slams like we just talked about this card. It gives Clothus things -1/-1.
Plague Engineer.
Plague Engineer. Mm. And you're like, fuck Plague Engineer. And then you draw Prismatic Ending and you're like, oh yeah. Like Prismatic Ending is the best card. Like, this is justice. And like, kind of, but also like, you're not playing removal in your deck, you know, like you just die to creatures, and sure, maybe creatures shouldn't have so many like things stapled to them, but you're just like, oh, I just ran two of these just in case this scenario happened that I did not envision at all. You know, it's like if you could make an earthquake kit, but instead it was just like a bad thing might happen. And then you just pulled the thing out and you're like, what happened? I'm like, oh, my car sold. I'm like, oh, cool. Okay, well, this bottle of water just turned into like a jump start for your car. And you're like, oh, sick. What a great little thing.
Yeah, your earthquake kit is just prismatic ending. You know, yeah. Don't worry, just whatever you need.
It solves every problem. Let's say you're stuck in a mud hole. Okay, so it just actually put prismatic ending under the tire. It'll get you right out of there.
It's funny talking about prismatic ending because I just think like it has a lot of parallels with the card that I actually really, really like. And I just think of like the Virgin Prismatic Ending and the Chad Council's Judgment. Cause like Judgment does the same thing, right? It deals with all the same permanents. It deals with all the stuff, but 3 mana feels like a nice spot for that effect. It's like, sure, you can get rid of bigger things that ending can't.
Having to play it on 3.
Yep. Playing it on 3
is a cost.
And Judgment was in such an interesting spot where like it comes up and, you know, 2 copies here and there in these control decks. It's like double white cost. like, it's, I think, a completely fair way to deal with everything. It's very slow, you know, it calms down. I've never seen anybody get upset when you resolve it and then they're like, oh, fucking my true name.
Man, when you go like situations where you're like playing against like your D&D opponent and you're like, I guess just fetch a basic island and ponder, and then you know you do whatever, you shuffle, you don't shuffle, you pass, and then they go Aether Vial and you're like, yeah, that resolves, and they're like, yes, and then you untap and you're like, I guess get a Tundra and like I'll just kill that and I'll ponder again, and you're like, fuck, that sucks. Like, I beat the days. You did beat the days, but I'm gonna keep all my mana in play, actually still trade one for one, and then I'm gonna play another cantrip and then I'll pass again. What are you gonna do next? Like, it's just like, oh,
it's remarkable that in a year where Prismatic Ending exists and D&T has diluted itself to 80 cards, it's still like the Aether Vial is still just amazing in this deck where you draw it less often and it gets fucking owned 50% of the time you play it. Like,
good Magic card. Oh, yeah. Aether Vial is, that's funny too, because Aether Vial is a card. Is this, here's a question, and you guys have a bias obviously as the two D&T dudes. I've never been like Aether Vial. Aether Vial. I mean, I have been like, the Aether Vial me, but I've never been like, well, because they played Aether Vial. You know, yeah. Like, it's like, hey, you played Aether Vial, you ticked it up for like three turns in a row, and I just sat there doing nothing, and then you killed me. And that's, I didn't like that, but it was fair.
It's extremely slow, and it helps being extremely specific. Like, I feel like, you know, new Aether Vial would be like, or less, in which case you're just like, yeah, up, up, up.
Aether Vial's sick. Card. Aether Vial. Good Magic card.
Usually people are cursing the card that Aether Vial brought in. They're like, oh, they had the Flicker Wisp or whatever it is. But it's like, Aether Vial made it all possible.
The same
like
thing, the though. Amount... Flicker Wisp, very fair Magic card. Very the good amount... when it has Flash. But I mean, those two things together over, you know, you waited three turns. That's my fault. Not yours.
I mean, that's the thing with Flicker Wisp and Aether Vial too, is the amount of people, once they like they try to play D&T or they're like asking you about a line, they're just like, wait, Flicker Wisp doesn't have Flash?
But it's got me so many times in instant speed. Yes, yes, yes. You're learning.
The amount of mana that Aether Vial lets you cheat on is insane. Like, and like, especially when you can do it like on curve where you're like 1, 2, 3, like at the end of the game, you're just like, oh, Aether Vial generated like 16 mana for me or something like that.
Then you got your ports going.
Oh yeah,
using your wastelands.
Jeff and I are getting all excited here.
Oh, when that whole, you know, all that shit is going on. I mean, like, it doesn't feel good being at the other end of it, but I respect it. I respect it enough that I still feel bad when I'm like, oh fuck, blow up. I guess I'll just blow up Aether Vial. Like, sorry.
I do really like the 80 card version now, where you're like, oh okay, you had it, sure. Well, I'm just going to keep dropping my shitty cards and just doing my thing. And like, it's still good enough. Like,
oh, you're still playing Legacy? Okay.
Yeah. For all the craziness that's gone on, like, again, I keep bringing it up, like this whole metric of like, is D&T and Aether Vial like playable? Because there's definitely been times where it's not. And it's just like the worst thing you could be doing. But like when it's good, I think like Legacy is in like a much better place than it could be. It's definitely like well above average. It might not be the best, and there's issues with it. I get all that, but like it's not like dog shit awful.
It depends on why it's good, because if the deck is good because the most prominent deck plays a card that you do better when you take good cards off the opponent's deck, and D&T does well by virtue of not having any good cards, I don't think that's a good metric.
Like, what are the good hits? Swords?
Mom? Dude, if Delver gets a vial, it's not bad. Stick that vial on one.
Sit vial on one.
Yeah, you get some equipment. I've had Delver hit me and then cast the Jite, and you're just like, oh, fuck me.
Like, really? That's death does variance, right?
It's variance for sure, but, you know, it's funny. Most of the time, you're like, yeah.
It's got to be like a 1 in 10, right, to get a good card.
It's probably lower.
So maybe just kind of like rounding things out here, this is again a repeated segment from all of our, this is our third year now. What do we wish for the new year? for 2022.
In the notes, you're first. Do you want to go first? You want me to go first?
I can go first here. I like how, okay, yeah, and I am first. So just going back to last year, we asked for more God accounts, and we also asked for Paper Magic to return. We asked for a vaccine. So far, we're doing pretty good here. So I just want to say, like, we have a lot of power with what we're going to be wishing for. So I don't know if I like we like rub our like red shoes together or whatever, but I want this pandemic to become an endemic and life to return to some amount of normalcy. And that's really what I would like to see.
Yeah.
I think now in retrospect, maybe you should have gone last because you really went over the top of our magic wishes.
Well, no, that's
I
like
agree, the big, 100%.
That's the big picture thing. Like, I think there's so much of everything, but just keeping it like magic specific for, continuing to keep it magic specific, the return of paper events, especially kind of like more international paper events. I know there's been lots of like for the US or in some places in Europe, even in Canada, to some extent, there'll be like domestic magic tournaments, but like international, actually crossing borders and stuff like that for a weekend is really problematic and kind of fraught with logistical challenges. And that scaling back and becoming a little bit more workable is going to be a really positive thing for something like Legacy, especially where it's dominated by people who are in their 30s and who have time and money to travel and do things. And to not be able to do that, I think is really detrimental. So yeah, moving past this pandemic stage of things and getting into the more endemic stages, I think can be really helpful for the Legacy community overall, especially for us as a group going across the border and going to see Tim and Jeremy and Jordan and some of the other folks down south of the border and getting your asses kicked. I think it's going to be really great when we can do it.
This is like the Belcher of wishes because we're just hoping for like positive variants right now. There's like rubbing our hands together being like... Does COVID have force of will? Let's see.
Is Taiga in the top? Is COVID the top 10 cards in my deck?
It's like, ooh, flips the Taiga off the top. Ooh, the variant is actually more permissible and more deadly. Oh, fuck.
So you're like, time to reload the cannon. Like, gotta draw my LED.
I love this boomer, like, Belcher you guys are playing as opposed to just it being just oops now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess you don't have Taigas anymore. Oh, that's a good, what's like, you know, like grandma and the walker meme?
Oh, yeah.
Back in my day, we had to play one Taiga in Belcher. Here, grandma, let's get you to bed.
Quinn, how about you?
Mine's much smaller in the grand scheme of things, but I would love if they stop making cards for Eternal formats. And I want to clarify, that's not like printing cards that aren't in standard that are Eternal legal. And I think before the cast, we talked about True Name Nemesis as an example, which I don't think is a particularly well-designed Magic card, except it was for Commander. And when you hear people who make the game say, well, like, mistakes need a place to live, and that's Legacy, hey, I'll take a True Name Nemesis, sure. Because that's a mistake that happened. Specifically because they designed a cool card for a multiplayer format that turned out to be, for a period of time, kind of busted in half in a 1v1 format. And like, hey, bring it on. We'll figure it out. But also speaking to things like Eternal Dragon that we talked about earlier, which I think there's a lot of space to explore if there's not...
Timeless
Dragon. If there's not 10 other cards that are better than that. That are being explored instead. I think Modern Horizons 2, they knocked it out of the park on a lot of cards, and like that was cool. But also it was cool when you just showed up and you're like, cool, just bringing D&T. And there's this one in a white 3/1 that blows up an enchantment or artifact I have to think about when I activate my Ink Moth Nexus now, because it's gonna come flashing in. instead of like, oh, he has like five new cards. The deck's totally different. One, they're just not good at balancing the power level, as we've seen. And two, like, if I wanted that, I would play a rotating format, which I do sometimes, and that's fine too. It's a different type of magic.
Just wait until next year when I get Frodo, then you're fucked.
Oh, yeah, that's a set, right?
Or yeah, is it a straight into modern set, I believe.
Oh, so it's like a Modern Horizons Lord of the Rings?
I believe so.
Oh my god.
Sam Strawberries is going to be so overpowered.
Do you think there'll be a card that's just potato? One mana. What's it do? It's potato.
New tokens.
It makes food tokens, and then you have to like boil and mash them, put them in a stew, and something happens.
It's like the blasting station like combo where you got all the pieces together, the boiler masher.
So maybe kind of like continuing on from Quinn's piece, Jeff, what's your wish for 2022?
One is a very short form wish, which I hoped would happen already, but it hasn't. I'd like to see a ban list update. I think everybody would enjoy that. And that can be, you know, kind of the typical request of like Ragavan and other specifics. Also looking at some unbans would be sick. Just some kind of change. I think by and large, a lot of people, especially in like the online meta, are very unhappy with where the format's at. And it'd be great to see them change that, especially after releasing their information before Eternal Weekend, being like, well, we're going to get some information and then we'll talk about it. That was like 2 months ago. Like, talk to me, Wizards. Aside from that, you know, talked about that many times on many episodes. I am super like wanting a GP, and you know, I'll take a GP in Vancouver. I don't care what format it is. I'll show up. If it's any GP in like Vancouver, Seattle, Portland, I'm there. Doesn't matter. Modern, fucking Pioneer, you know, block constructed, prismatic. I'm there. But specifically, if there's any kind of legacy GP, decent size, maybe a Missouri, you know, 200K again, just going out to a big tournament with a group of people is so much fun. And I can't wait to do that again. And we got some kind of taste of that this year just through like, it felt like a big get together when we just have eight of us playing Magic. But being able to go, you know, with somewhere near eight of us to somewhere, getting like an Airbnb or two, all of the good things that come with that, going out to eat, going out to drink, just having a really good time. I can't wait to have that happen again. And I'm sure you two echo that sentiment. Or you're thinking, fuck that, I never want to see you again.
I was trying to think of a joke where I'm like, we have to share a bed one more time. I swear to God.
The last time I had to go on a plane ride with you, Jeff, I ended up buying a Switch and playing a whole bunch of Slay the Spire.
Oh, yeah.
Which is sweet. So I'm not going to complain.
I have to mention, we're on our way home from Eternal Weekend. I have a Switch. You have a Switch. Ellie has a Switch. And then we get our seat assignments. I'm like, I'm not sitting with you guys. And then McBain goes, oh, well, if you're sitting by yourself, can I borrow your Switch? And I'm like, no, I definitely need this. You could take my seat. He's like, well, I don't want to sit by myself. I'm like, well, then I need the Switch. You get what I'm saying, right?
That whole trip, you just look over and man, you see the eyes. It was like, come on.
Can I use the Switch right now?
Like the Dave Chappelle, where he's like, you got any more of them Switches?
Oh, that was a good trip, man. Like, it's so easy to reminisce over this stuff because they're all fucking bangers. It's so good. Okay, moving on. This has been a very section oriented episode. There's been a lot of moving ons and a lot of bringing us around or rounding about or about that point.
Yeah, we're still nearing 2 hours. I want to say that.
Oh my goodness.
But halfway through, I was like, wow, we're really ripping through this. We've got enough content. We did it. I never doubted us for a second that we could stretch it out.
I think on that note of stretching it out, enough content, we should move on to That's Gas. And I am going to introduce myself to That's Gas and just do the first one, take the bullet.
I thought you were going to That's Gas yourself. And I was like, you can't do that.
There's been a lot of good people, you know, in the community this year. And there's a lot of good people in my life this year, both in the community, out of the community. But I feel like for the community, for, you know, the culture, I need to specifically shout out Jason Murray and JR. Everybody knows who these people are, but the amount of work they've done on Death and Taxes in the last year, you know, the amount of work Jason did to just say, hey, you should play 80 cards, even before like Solitude and stuff came out, you know, just really pushing stuff forward in a way that I can't, and like looking at things and a big picture and really, you know, scheming where all of the bits come into play and the perfect sideboard slots and, you know, deck lists. Like, these guys have just been defining the deck in a way that, you know, nobody else does. And all of the content they put out is fantastic. Like, there's so many people that are, you know, deck masters or drive the progression of the deck forward through their consistent, you know, challenge wins or, you know, whatever. But it's not often they also then write the guides and documentation to bring everyone else up to that level. Like, you can give somebody a guide to play D&T written by, you know, JR and Jason Murray, and they've articulated everything they've thought, right? The reason they're doing certain things in certain cases, why they're playing certain cards over other ones, and they're really just trying to bring everybody up to that level, and it's awesome to see.
I definitely co-sign that. I have snorfled in as much information as I can get from those two. I've watched specifically some of those reruns that they do,
mm-hmm.
where they'll walk through their plays. And it's what I find so refreshing when you're watching it is where they kind of pause and they like talk out a line. They're like, oh yeah, yeah. Okay. There's these three options. And like, this one's, yeah, we agree that this one's the best. And then whoever it was who actually played the events, like, well, I got a surprise for you. We didn't do any of the three lines we discussed. I did this dog shit line and I played really badly. And it just kind of reveals that like, even these masters, like, can't play the deck like as well as their best selves can consistently. So it's kind of humbling in that way where you kind of like, yeah, this is hard and we're all learning together. So I definitely like that part of it, but yeah, big shout outs to those two. Karash Alizada, or AKA Sid on Twitter. He's got a bit more of a Twitter handle, but let's call him Slid, but he's the creator of the Pendril Vale or the Lands website. And he actually invited me to kind of participate in a Lands year-end article review, similar to kind of like Joe's This Week in Legacy article, which we actually participated in as well. So I was quite honored. I was like, I don't think I'm like a Lands expert or anything like that. Like, yeah, I do play the deck, but so there was several people who participated, and the article is going to be probably coming out any minute now. So probably by the time this has been posted, but yeah, big shout outs to, again, like, this is another kind of like pillar of the Lands community. Like, they've gone as far as to create like the Lands website where all these articles and YouTube and Twitch streams and everything are stored and housed. So that gets a bit more curated in that way, which is really nice. So yeah, big shout outs to Crush. Quinn, you want to take us out?
Mine is you guys. And also both Tristan's, other Brendan, Justin, 5, 6, who else? Rob showed up. Now that I started trying to name everyone, Lyle, who I haven't seen in ages. I'm forgetting one person.
Yourself?
Oh, am I the eighth? Yeah, is that how it works?
We did have nine.
I should have written this down ahead of time.
Everyone.
Anyways, as I kind of mentioned, I'm now 40 as of 11 days ago. And I think Brendan, I feel like Liz put the bug in your ear and you kind of just like got everyone together through me. I would say, and I still maintain my favorite birthday of all time, but also would have been the best birthday of all time when I was like 12. And so 28 years later, we fucking got there. And we had the most incredible chaos draft slash cube day. It was also very similar to that mystery booster draft, Jeff, we did at your house in like March of 2020, where I feel like we just got in ahead of the like specter of Omicron. But yeah, I opened a pack of World Wake, which like for the first time actually, because that was when I was not currently playing Magic. We looked at a lot of old Magic cards. We drank some beer. We ate some pizza. And we played some cube, and it was just the best time. So thanks, guys.
No, I mean, truly, it was my pleasure.
I you two having to put yourselves, you know, in a place where you had to play Magic all day, I think is the part that really meant the most to me. If you would do something like that, force yourselves for me.
You know, my favorite Magic related memory of that day was when we're drafting, I got the pack of Conspiracy and I took a card where it's like, you know, you reveal it when you draft it. And then it's like a 7 mana, I don't know, 7/3 or something. And when it comes, once you reveal it, you have to then reveal the next card that you draft. So that, you know, they're tied together. And whenever you cast the big golem guy, you get to search your deck or hand and put the other card into play for free. I was like, this card is sick. This is going to be insane. And then the next pack that came to me was sixth edition. And the, the card that I had to take was some fucking 3/3 island walk Leviathan. Like, oh,
Segovian Leviathan.
Yeah. Like the heights I had were so high. I'm like, this is gonna be so good. And then no, Leviathan.
I'm gonna get that World Wake pack. It's gonna have an Eldrazi in it. No, what if you got a Leviathan from the Island of Tiny Things instead?
That was a good time, man.
Yeah. Anything else to sum up the year that was, gentlemen?
No, I felt that. Well, big shouts to Liz, your partner, for kind of nudging us down that direction and just saying like, hey, is there some like nerdy thing that you can do with Quinn, and kind of like working with us to set it up. So I think that was a great thing. And it was kind of like you said, in that same specter of like slipping in and getting in a big event before things kind of went crazy again. That was really nice and a good way to kind of end the year. And again, just getting to do those like in paper cubes and everything was really great. So a great way to then end the year, really. And we'll see what we get for 2022.
And on that note, thanks for listening tonight. Thanks for listening throughout the last year. I think I speak for all of us when I say I think part of getting through this whole pandemic thing has been that we got to do this and that people actually give a shit. So thanks a lot for listening, and we will see you all in Two Thresholds.
Don't scare.